I spoke to the New University about the upcoming debate tonight with Don Brash about PC culture and the freedom of speech. Here they are. For those who are unaware of your group, what or who are a New University?
New University is a group of students and staff.
Yeah.
And basically, our kaupapa is to democratize the university. The group started when the library closures were announced, and like there were a lot of announcements about staff being fired and things like that.
How would you describe what's happening tonight in terms of the debate and the protest?
Okay, so basically what's happening tonight is that Don Brash and a few other people, such as Anand, who used to be the Governor General, and someone from the Conservative Party, coming to have a debate about PC culture. Don Brash is coming to speak about free speech. Basically, the protest tonight is in opposition to Don Brash being invited on campus based on the rhetoric that he represents and the people that he has formerly come out and to support, such as Lauren Southern and Stephen Molyneux. So basically that Don Brash contravenes with a lot of the equity principles that the university is supposed to uphold and the protection of staff and students.
Do you think that by providing a platform for Dr. Brash to speak, it only reinforces the idea that the university is an instrument for the colonial project?
I think that Don Brash represents a certain Eurocentric view that we're trying to get away from within the university. So like not holding knowledge systems as Eurocentric knowledge system as the centre of the university.
I don't know, I guess that I would say that the presence of Don Brash and the provision of a platform for him does fundamentally enforce the coloniality of this institution, insofar as it's the provision of space for people who have already been given too much space, right? It's not, his views are not going to be surprising, it's not going to be anything novel. We know what he's saying, we've seen the content of his speech, and actually any speech or any debate with Don Brash has never been a real debate, because he refuses to accept the ideas, the position of his opponents, insofar as he just presupposes that there is the Treaty of Waitangi, which says that there is sovereignty was ceded, and kind of holds on to this thing uttered by Hobson, which is that we are one people now, and he just refuses to see the validity of Te Tiriti or Waitangi, which would say that there was no sovereignty ceded, and therefore doesn't even engage in a level playing field with Māori academics, with critical academics, and kind of just walls them off.
Do you think that the rest of the panel will balance out Brash's views?
I mean, I'm personally not confident that this debate will be an open one, or I don't think that the views represented there will be fundamentally in contradiction to one another. I think that they entertain like a happy middle ground between all of them, such that there's not going to be any sort of real disagreement. And I think that is our job to bring that disagreement and to contest those ideas.
What do you think entitles or qualifies Don Brash to be an authority on these kind of issues? Like, his background isn't... He is not an academic in terms of having done research into freedom of speech or even philosophy, or he's essentially a public figure whose background is as a politician and as a banker. I struggle to see personally the qualifications that he has, I mean, among with the rest of the panel, to be quite frank, on the topic. But do you guys have any insight? Am I missing anything?
I think that what you're missing is what we're all missing, which is it's the fact that there isn't a qualification other than the fact that he believes himself to be able to have a position on the question of free speech, a position on the question of Māori rights, a position on these things by virtue of him just being a white man, I think, in a fundamentally white supremacist society, in a colony, right? I think he oversaw the sort of destruction of the welfare systems and the decimation of anything of the social democratic compromise during the sort of 80s when he was a reserve banker. And I think his history is one of destroying social institutions, of one of taking away rights from people, of undermining any sort of equity between people. And I think by virtue of that history, and I think by virtue of his being a white man in a colony, he sees himself as fit for making these sorts of decisions. But also, you just need to look at the rest of Hobson's Pledge. They're all business owners, and they're all of the same sort of ilk. Yeah.
Do you think allowing him to speak legitimizes his views?
Yeah, so I guess that's the whole rhetoric with the free speech thing, you know, like that it's a democracy of opinions, that a lot of, that we're allowed to have different views even though they deny the existence of certain documents that are that were the founding documents of this country and supposed to be a relationship between two kinds of people. I think it allows for Don Brash to support people that deny the material effects of colonization on people. I think that we've seen a lot of support for Don Brash, and his views. I think that he's been espousing the same kind of rhetoric for years, right? Since the Ottawa speech, we've seen Don Brash kind of just step on Māori rights and and te ao Māori and tikanga Māori and te reo Māori. Like, the fact that he comes out to support free speech and to support racism and to support white supremacy, or not support, I guess, endorse people that are paid to promote white supremacy and race science.
Often the defense of free speech is that any free speech is fine until it incites violence. Do you think that's a valid line to draw?
I would. It's a very, I think, difficult issue to wrap one's head around. But I think that when we do speak of free speech in those terms, and we do speak about it being, you know, the line is drawn at this question of the incitement of violence, generally what people think as being, as constituting violence, is calling for one to physically harm another on the basis of, I don't know, a racial trait, a sort of a gendered trait, or these sorts of things. But I think that the conversation fundamentally misses that there are different ways of conceiving of violence. And I think that when you are, I mean, as we are, living in a colony, in a place whose history is one of violent colonization, in a place whose current relations of power are ones that are still imbued with this sort of coloniality, then when you say we are one people, we shouldn't give privilege, we shouldn't give any sort of reparations to Māori people, then you are enforcing a historical system of colonial violence, and you are calling for the maintenance of these colonial power relations such that the violence that is imbued in those relations is covered over, right? And so I think that, yeah, this question of violence is often posed in too simple terms.
Continuing on from that, I was going to say, do you think that the affirmation of harmful attitudes towards minorities negates or denies the existence, importance, and freedoms of those groups?
Yeah, I mean, I would say yes, fundamentally yes. When you use your platform as a public figure to, under the guise of free speech, perpetuate those beliefs, you are complicit, and I think, like, actively so, in the exclusion and in the continued minorization of these minorities. I don't know what you think, Amiria.
I agree. I think that the whole one people rhetoric, I think the whole we're all one people rhetoric kind of, it doesn't make everyone into this inclusive bubble. It excludes people from this bubble when it assumes that we all start from one place, and that the effects of colonization don't exist anymore, and that there's only one document that we don't need to talk about, Te Tiriti, anymore, because it doesn't exist, because Māori signed away their rights and that's it, right? So I guess, like, it kind of silences one part of history.
Do you think that, like, we've seen the Southern and Molyneux talk, then there was a Free Tommy Robinson rally the next day, then on the 4th of September, Nigel Farage is supposedly coming to speak, then sometime in September, Pauline Hanson is supposedly coming to speak. Do you think that this kind of mass influx of action from the right will normalize those kinds of attitudes that those kinds of speakers promote?
Yeah, I think I would fundamentally agree that these are nothing new, but I would say that the increase in sort of the alt-right online presence, their sort of rhetorical presence globally, I mean, it's, I think, the basis of the terms for the debate that's happening this evening. I don't think that we would have been having this debate about, like, this idea of, like, what PC culture is and its relation to the left and how it's inhibiting free speech. I don't think we would have even been having this debate in these terms if it wasn't for the work of the right in both proliferating their viewpoint, but also framing themselves in that very proliferation as victims, as oppressed, as some sort of fringe minority. But I mean, what they're saying is not different. Their ideas about the sort of the lesser IQ of races and stuff, that's been around and justified all sorts of atrocities and genocides and violences forever. So yeah, it's not new, but it's definitely allowing people to come out and say it, supposedly backed by rational thinking or science.
People have been quick to point out a distinction between Brash's views and the views of Molyneux and Southern, who are possibly more extreme. I would like to suggest the idea that Brash's historical revisionism is potentially just as dangerous in a lot of cases, especially in the New Zealand context. Would you agree with this?
I think that I would, and I think everyone at university would agree with that wholeheartedly and completely. I think that although Brash might not be coming out and kind of saying explicitly supposedly radical things as Molyneux and Southern are saying, but I think that his you termed it correctly when you said like this kind of historical revisionism and this kind of this and we saw it, I think, in other politicians as well, with people like John Key, who would say that the history of this country was one of peaceful colonization. This idea of erasing history and I mean essentially whitewashing it is as violent, because it allows people to go about their daily life and go about their daily interactions with this idea of what the history of this country is, and that inframes the way that people comport themselves towards black and brown and Māori people here, but it also inframes the way that they think in terms of in political terms about what, you know, oh, is it really necessary to have the Māori wards anymore? Is putting Te Reo in schools necessary? And I think that when you have no historical understanding of this history of this country and the real history of this country, then you start talking about these things and talking in very different terms. So I think that like an understanding of the real history of this country is vital, and I think people like Brash, who would erase that or whitewash it, are dangerous.